Hello and welcome to this National Life Skills Academy podcast, part of our series of short introductions to essential life-worthy skills to help guide your way. So sit back and enjoy.
Working in a team is something that you'll come across in your life quite often. It involves the collaborative harnessing of individual ideas and thoughts in order to solve a problem. In order for teams to work efficiently and effectively, there needs to be a good understanding of what makes a good team, a high-performing team, in the first place, and what the different roles can be in a team, and what those roles entail. With differing opinions and thoughts, working in a team can have a multitude of challenges, but effective team working can be very simple and you can enjoy it. So, thankfully, there are no set rules in a team. You have to make do with what you have, and sometimes it involves taking on more than one role, depending on the size of the team, of course. Now, because of this, it's important to know the different types of roles that you may have to undertake in order to work successfully. And this includes what the roles are, why they're important within the team, and what these roles' strengths and weaknesses may be. Now, the Belbin Team Inventory was devised by Raymond Belbin, who's an English researcher and management consultant. The reason for this creation of this teams that he put together was to measure preferences for 9 different team roles in order to create effective team working and team management. The Belbin Team Inventory is like this. Let's say that we have a plant in our team. The plant is the creative, idea-generating member who's there to solve problems that the team might face. Now, the issues that the plant face are that they can often ignore incidentals. This means they can be too focused on the main issue at hand and not fix the smaller problems that could well be contributing to the overall difficulty of the issue. And on top of this, they can be too preoccupied to communicate effectively with other team members. Then we have the resource investigator. Now, the resource investigator is somebody who will make connections with other people. They're often outgoing and enthusiastic, and we want to explore, potential opportunities that the team can take, for example. And with being a resource investigator, interest can be lost once the initial enthusiasm has passed, and they can become over-optimistic and can set out to achieve more than what's actually possible. Then we have the coordinator. Now, the coordinator will need to be mature and not afraid of managing other team members effectively. In doing so, communication will be an important characteristic because they'll have to delegate work, give work to other people, and then clarify the goals that the team has or wants to get and needs to achieve. Now, with delegating and managing, it can be seen as manipulative if it's not completely correct or fairly delegated. This can cause rifts in the team, problems within the teams, especially if this is added to by the coordinator, offloading their own work onto others for the sake of the team. Okay, then there's the shaper. Now, the shaper is often the driving force behind the team. They need to be able to thrive and enjoy pressure and be versatile and flexible and have the self-confidence in their own ability to get everything done. They'll need to face challenges and obstacles head on and have the courage to bounce back again if they don't succeed. Now, given that they will need to be driven and resilient, they can potentially hurt other people's feelings if they assume that they're not pulling their weight or are giving up too easily. They may also suffer from being relatively easy to provoke and make irritated, particularly if something doesn't work as it's intended to. And then there's the monitor evaluator. The monitor evaluator is the team member that will need to be grounded and strategic in reality. They'll need to make assessments on all possible solutions, being able to fairly analyse and critique them with minimal bias for the best possible outcome. The monitor evaluator can be potentially unable to motivate other team members and lack the drive needed to push for better outcomes. Given the nature of their role is to judge and assess the options, they can sometimes be a bit overly critical of certain solutions. The team worker, on the other hand, can be seen as the people pleaser of the group. They'll need to be approachable and friendly and have the ability of working with lots of people in different sectors. It's also the duty of the team worker to make sure that the other team members stay positive and try to avoid getting irritated with each other and having arguments. The main issue with being the team worker is that given the nature of the job is to please others and make sure they all stay positive, is that during critical decisions, they can often seem to be a bit indecisive. And should they fail at their responsibilities, and friction and irritation and conflict does arise, they can avoid it and leave it for the other team members to solve. And then we should also have an implementer. The implementer is a reliable, practical member of the team who turns ideas into thoughts and actions. They decide what work needs to be done. The implementer can sometimes be inflexible. Now, this could mean that they're too focused on one idea, that they're unable to focus on other ideas, which should be crucial. Now, should they respond to new ideas while focused on another, they might react slowly, meaning the idea could be redundant and not much use by the time they come to give it some thought. The complete finisher. Now, as the name might suggest, the complete finisher is the team member who polishes and perfects and looks for errors that the other team members might have missed. Now, because of this, the complete finisher will need to be patient and thorough and painstakingly analytical. The nature of the job indicates that the complete finisher can be too anxious at times and therefore want to find a problem even if there isn't one. And if they find a problem, they can also be reluctant to delegate blame and therefore show a lack of good communication skills. And then, finally, we have a specialist. And the specialist is single-minded. They're a person who proves very knowledgeable about specific things. They'll need to be dedicated to solving and helping where they can. Now, the problem with the specialist is that they're only really useful in certain instances. And even when they are useful, it's only a specific area that they're useful in. And this could result in them being entirely useless if their specialist field is not needed at fixing this problem. Now, on top of this, they can also dwell on technicalities too much, overthink technical problems, which again could get them out of doing their fair share of work, particularly if that work isn't related to their field of expertise. In every team you're going to be a part of, you should be able to categorise people into these roles, including yourself. Now, it may be, in your team, that there are not 9 people. Or there might be more. So people will fit into these categories based off their personalities and the amount of work they intend to do and the general mindset they have to working in a team. I think, as you can see, with all of these different personalities in a team, and generally this is, I've worked in many teams all over the world, small teams and large teams, and generally speaking, you do find these characters are there, and they can make things very, very difficult for everybody else. So, what makes teamwork effective? Teamwork is a collaborative process, and if done correctly, should involve everyone and harness their best characteristics in order to successfully complete whatever assignment or solution or issue you've been given to deal with. So the question is, how does a team work effectively. There's a handful of ways in which this can be achieved, and it doesn't really take a lot of effort or skill to achieve. For starters, one of the most annoying and one of the most common issues that teams will face is micromanagement. Micromanagement is where somebody, often a boss somewhere up the line, will overly critique and question every decision you make, which, more often than not, will result in negative feedback from the individual. Most likely because you're not doing it in the way they would do it. And this can lead to negativity between the team members, which of course can have an effect on the team as a whole. Generally, micromanagement is needless and is never helpful. It can cripple self-thought and idea generation because mainly it kills morale, it kills enthusiasm within the members of the team, and therefore the whole team's morale can drop down if it's being badly micromanaged. The best way to deal with micromanagement is just to stop it completely, just to say, no, not having any of that, thank you very much. Meetings are another factor in what can make a team more effective. The problem with meetings is that while they're necessary, they can be relied upon too often for communication and successful forward-thinking planning. Meetings should aim to be informative and focused. Studies have shown that about 40% of employee time is wasted in meetings, and that other work is often brought into them. Try to make meetings as short as possible, but filled with as much information as possible. Don't get distracted, don't change topics, just say what needs to be said, listen to what needs to be listened to, and go back to work. We used to have meetings standing up. There were no chairs. They didn't last very long, but they were very effective. Finally, you'll want to make sure that yourself and other team members are in a good frame of mind to work. This means you're not being overworked to the point where your actual working is having little or no impact on the work, the task you've got to do. You also want to have a good bond, good friendship with your team members, because this creates more effective communication, which can lead to new solutions and ideas. Little things like lunch breaks, music recommendations, going for a drink or a bite to eat outside of work can all improve the team's relationship. If in your team you can notice that certain people don't talk to each other or certain groups are always seen together, try and break it up. You're much more effective as one than you are as individuals all working on the same task, but not together. Team working is all about the collective agreement towards the goal you've been set. Working in a team means pulling your own weight. Think of it like a football team. Each player has their designated place, their designated role. And if one player doesn't perform, the team can lose. And this is the same for every task or assignment you might get. Team working isn't the easiest to get to grips with, but to understand what makes a team effective and understand your role, strengths and weaknesses can go a long way in helping you to improve your own effectiveness as an individual and as a group. And one thing they're doing in universities now to prepare people for a world of work is in the second year and third year, in the final years, they're giving you more teamwork to do and not stepping in to help you. They're letting you sort out your own characteristic problems, which is basically understanding how all of these nine roles work. So I wish you good luck with that. Be patient with people and be honest. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope you found that to be informative, and you'll sign in to listen to others in the series. We look forward to any requests or feedback. See you again soon.